Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. If you listen to the program on a regular basis, you know that last week I talked with Matthew Hawkins, and I couldn't remember the name of a particular book, and that book is Demanding Liberty, An Untold Story of American Religious Freedom. And I actually have copies of Demanding Liberty to give away. And so if you are interested in religious liberty conversations, if you're interested in why Christians ought to be advocating for religious liberty writ large, for people of all faiths, not just for Christians, this is a great book. And it's called Demanding Liberty, An Untold Story of American Religious Freedom. If you would like a copy, you can text me, 877-933-2484. You can also email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. That's not the only book in front of us today. Next up, I am going to talk with Rabbi Evan Moffick about First the Jews, combating the world's longest-running hate campaign. You and I have been talking here on Mornings with Carmen about news of violence, shootings, defaced synagogues, death threats against the Jewish community, not only here in the United States but around the world, particularly in France and Great Britain. Like, we've been talking about the rise of anti-Semitism from the far right here in the United States. And now we see a rise of anti-Semitism of a different kind from the left. We're going to talk about not only those issues, but what we can actually do about it. First, the Jews, combating the world's longest running hate campaign, a conversation with Rabbi Evan Moffick via Skype, up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am joined now by Rabbi Evan Moffick via Skype. He is the author of First the Jews, Combating the World's Longest Running Hate Campaign. Rabbi Moffick, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thanks, Carmen. Such a delight to be on your show.
Well, it's a joy to be with you. You and I have a lot of mutual friends. I would really appreciate if you, as a Jew, help us understand from your perspective, what is anti-Semitism, and why does it still exist?
Well, the first one is easier to answer than the second. Anti-Semitism is simply hostility towards Jews, and it can happen in actions, it can happen in words, it can even happen in just general worldview, how people see Jews, and it's a historical reality. It was for a long time a theological reality, and still is for some. And it's been around for even before Christianity. I mean, anti-Semitism, you can see it in the Bible. There arose a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph in the book of Exodus. So anti-Semitism has been around for a long time. Why it continues is the big question. And some of it has to do, I think, one of the reasons I wrote this book is that I think it's a spiritual issue. I think there is something within people that needs a scapegoat, needs someone to blame for the difficulties we all face in life. And Jews have emerged as that group. And there's a lot going on in the world today. And that's where the title comes from, First the Jews, where when Jews are targeted for oppression, when people dislike Jews and persecute Jews, you know that they hate many, many more. You were speaking about religious freedom. And when Jews are enslaved, when Jews are oppressed, that means other peoples will soon as well. And so that's where the title comes from. And that's why it's a spiritual problem, not just for Jews, but for all people of faith. In fact, all people of liberty and consciousness.
Well, that's exactly right. I think that it's really, so from my perspective, it's just, it's so hard to imagine what's going on in a person's heart, let alone their head, when they are actively like hating the people from whom, for those of us who are Christians, we acknowledge the Savior came. Like, right? So part of this is just this. I'll just admit to you, I have a hard time getting into feeling empathy toward or understanding a person who is responding with hate toward Jews. Now, so why don't we do this? How about you tell your story? Tell people how you led your community in responding to anti-Semitic attacks, because I think that your response helps us understand, engage the other.
Well, it really starts with, I grew up with so little anti-Semitism. I mean, I grew up in Houston, Texas, and then Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Wonderful parents, lived in a pretty mixed community, went to public school, and really just never experienced anti-Semitism my whole life. And when I applied to be a rabbi, when I felt that calling, I didn't think I would ever have to deal with anti-Semitism. I kind of thought we were entering into a new age. And then really, things started to happen after September 11, 2001. Many people blamed Israel, said Israel was secretly behind it. And then at the same time, there was a rise in anti-Semitism in the Middle East. And so it began to happen on college campuses were the first place where we began to see this new anti-Semitism from the left that said Israel is an apartheid state, Israel is oppressing others, and anyone who supports Israel is guilty of anti-Semitism. And so as a rabbi, people in my community started reporting feeling harassed, especially college students. People started seeing it more. My community has been very involved in civil rights work, and they were seeing some among their partners in different coalitions saying things about Jews and about Jews being oppressors. Black Lives Matter even said, of all the countries in the world, it said Israel is guilty of genocide. So I felt that, how is this happening? Israel, which is this beacon of liberty and democracy in the Middle East, is being called a genocidal and apartheid state. So I began to reach out to partners that I'd worked with in the Christian community, and we began to really have some serious dialogue and discussions. I led an interfaith group to Israel to talk about these issues. So it was really just – it wasn't – you know, a one or two major actions. It was a lot of ongoing education and discussion, and really trying to help people see how this is a serious hate issue. You know, Jews are the number one target of hate crimes in America. So it's kind of bringing that to people's attention. That was really my biggest challenge as a rabbi, and something that I didn't even imagine doing when I first started out.
So if you're listening, my conversation partner is Rabbi Evan Mafik. He is the author of First the Jews, Combating the World's Longest Running Hate Campaign. Rabbi Mafik, let's tell people this notion of First the Jews, right? So this is, for those of us who are Christians, this is about the Saturday people and then the Sunday people. Am I right?
Yes. Yes.
And who's going into the sea first?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. But it comes from the Gospels, and Paul, it originally started with Paul saying first the Jews, in that the early Christians needed to reach out to their brethren who were all Jews to say, this is the message of Jesus, the Messiah. Now, as a Jew, that's not the way I read the text. I understood first the Jews as kind of like Jews are the miner's canary. You know, before there were machines that could go and test mines to see if you could go in and mine in there, miners would send a canary, and if the canary died, you knew you couldn't go into that mine. And Jews, in a way, are the miner's canary. When a society targets Jews, you know they'll target many others. They'll target anyone who's different. They'll target people of other races. They'll target people of other religions. In every major empire that has oppressed others, Stalinist Russia, Nazi Germany, even going back to the Ottoman Empire and Rome, Jews were always targeted. So first the Jews is as much a political and sociological statement about hate and about society and about culture as it is about religion.
Hmm. So I'm going to continue my conversation with Rabbi Evan Mafik in just a moment here on Mornings with Carmen. We're going to actually equip and empower the listener today to stop the resurgence and spread of anti-Semitism. We're going to talk about very practical ways to do that using the book First the Jews, Combating the World's Longest running hate campaign. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBerge. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I am continuing my conversation with Rabbi Evan Moffick. He tweets at Chicago Rabbi. I love this description that you are a guide to Jewish wisdom for people of all faiths. I might totally steal that and just stick the word Christian in there and be done with it, because that's like the greatest way of describing what you do and who you are. I completely appreciate that. For folks who don't know, Rabbi Moffick is the author of several books, including What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Jewishness of Jesus, What Every Christian Needs to Know About Passover, The Happiness Prayer, Shalom for the Heart, and most recently, First the Jews, Combating the World's Longest-Running Hate Campaign. Rabbi Moffick, how do we actually combat anti-Semitism? Because I think that the practical nature of the book is what we really want to hone in on here.
Well, I think the first is a little bit of theological self-awareness. You know, the first book that I wrote, which still, you know, is my best-selling one, is called What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Jewishness of Jesus. And this was really reclaiming Jesus as a Jew, as a rabbi, and understanding that Christianity is deeply rooted in Judaism. And one of the great miracles of the 20th century is that Jews and Christians have reconciled and can get along as people of faith better now than in any other time in history. So really appreciating the Jewishness of Christianity. So that's one element. And when it comes to practical anti-Semitism, I think speaking out when we see it, you know, a patient can't cure himself. So Jews can't stop anti-Semitism. We can speak out about it, but it really comes from allies and others saying something, speaking out about it, and really fighting for religious freedom everywhere. When people are free to practice their faith, Judaism thrives, Christianity thrives, even Islam thrives. And so there, I think, you know, fighting for the values we all care about, freedom and faith and speaking out against hate, all of those are the most practical and important things we can do to fight anti-Semitism.
And immediately, you know, you recognize that I'm going to get some pushback from evangelical Christians who, you know, who are saying to themselves, hey, but my first order priority is the conversion of my neighbor. And let me just speak directly to that concern. If you're, you know, if you're listening right now and that's what's in your heart, let me just say that your first concern is to love your neighbor. And my neighbors are not all Christians. In fact, most of my neighbors are not Christians. And how am I actually visibly demonstrating the love of God that I know in Jesus Christ to my neighbor? And I'm not constantly doing that by suggesting that my neighbor is less than what they need to be because they don't agree with me on matters of the faith. If God wants to turn a human heart toward himself in a particular direction and in a particular way, he's going to do that. So, you know, Rabbi Moffick, thank you for letting me have that side conversation there with the third party right now in the conversation, which is the listener. So when we talk about just really practical engagement in conversation, what are some ideas that you've got to share with people?
I think an awareness, you know, talking about the history of anti-Semitism. When I wrote this book and I've spoken about it at different churches, many people were not aware of the history of anti-Semitism in the medieval church. Many people aren't even aware. I mean, people may have a vague idea that Jesus was Jewish, but people don't know a lot what that means. A lot of people think Jesus was sort of taken out of the Old Testament as a sort of Old Testament Jew, whereas truthfully, Jesus was a rabbinic Jew. Was, you know, a lot of the teachings in the Gospels are very similar to what the Pharisees and what is taught in the Talmud. So seeing that parallel, talking about Israel, learning about what's happening in Israel. I mean, evangelical Christians are the greatest allies of Israel in the world. So really understanding that story of Israel and what Israel stands for, because sadly, a lot of the anti-Semitism we see today really stems of how people view Israel. So I think reading about Israel, looking at different news sources, keeping up with what's going on. That is a very practical thing. And I think just partnering and learning together. I mean, some of my very closest friends are evangelical ministers. So I've had these conversations about faith and what it means to turn our hearts. And we respect one another and we study together. I spent an entire year studying the book of Deuteronomy with a very close friend who's a minister here in Chicago. And it was an amazing experience. So really studying and learning together. We have to have the humility that of our own faith to say, yes, we believe these convictions strongly, and yet we can study and work and talk with others who may not share that. We need that kind of humility. But when we have that humility, can really study and delve in and learn together, I see that as reducing anti-Semitism in unimaginable ways.
So I find myself wondering if you know Bob Roberts from the Northwood Church in Texas and the global movement and like the my neighbor's keeper. If you're not engaged in those conversations, man, that is totally right up your alley. And you, I'm gonna be sure that you connect with those guys because that they should know you and you should know them. The conversations that are happening at the leadership level between evangelical Christians, Muslims, and Jewish leaders across the country is going to be the basis for how we as a pluralistic, religiously pluralistic country really move forward in positive ways and how to positively respond when one another are attacked, right? So first the Jews is sometimes yes. that you guys are attacked first. And if we don't come to your aid and if we don't come to your defense and if we don't say, hey, you know, everybody has a right to believe what they believe here in America and around the world, then, you know, they come for us next. And so I appreciate not just the spirit of the book, but I appreciate how practical it is. And let me remind folks, it's First the Jews, Combating the World's Longest Running Hate Campaign. Rabbi Evan Moffick is the author. You can follow him on Twitter at Chicago Rabbi. What do you want to say to our listeners as we conclude this conversation today?
Well, one of my favorite stories, well, it's a sad story, but it's a powerful story, and it's in the introduction to the book, actually comes from a German pastor named Martin Niemöller, who survived World War II. And he said, in this famous quote, he said, "First they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the teachers, and I didn't speak up because I was not a teacher. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak up because I was not a Jew." And then he concludes this was, "Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out." And that's why anti-Semitism matters. If we are people of faith and people of conscience and people who care, we have to speak out when others target Jews, because we know that, you know, hate doesn't end with Jews. It's really a universal problem. And I think Martin Niemöller, who was a Lutheran pastor and a deep thinker, understood that a long time ago. And I just want to share that message with the world today.
Rabbi Evan Moffick, thank you so much for being with us here today on Mornings with Carmen. We look forward to having a continuing conversation with you.
Thank you, Carmen. What an honor.
Friends, I got to take a quick break and then I'll be right back. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. We're going to have a conversation with Dr. David Aikman, editor of Godspeed Magazine. He and I love to talk every Monday morning about headline news, particularly that is of an international flair. So he and I are going to talk about what's going on in Venezuela, how you be praying about that, what we can expect to happen there. We're going to talk about Brexit. The month of March is upon us, which means the deadline looms and wow, things are getting a little crazy. And then I'm hoping that he and I also have time to talk about the woman who was born here in the United States. Her father was a diplomat from Yemen. She aligned with ISIS. She moved to Syria. Now she has a child. She wants to come back to the U.S. You know, unfortunately, she's a terrorist. So I'm going to ask Dr. Aikman for his thoughts on that as well. All of that up next on Mornings with Carmen.
Every family faces its own challenges. And while mom, dad, and kids each play their role at the center, don't forget one powerful source of rescue when times are tough. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Grandparents can be an important piece of the puzzle when families are struggling. They can come alongside difficult kids and grandkids to give a hug, to provide seasoned advice, and to introduce a little laughter at the right moment. No one can have an impact quite like a grandparent. If you have grandkids, use your strengths and resources to help the family. Your non-judgmental presence in a crisis will reap rich reward. So be intentional in your role. You're not a nuisance or an interference during hard times. You have the opportunity to accomplish what no one else can.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. That music means that Dr. David Aikman is back in the house. Good sir, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Carmen. So nice to be on your program when you're in charge.
I resisted calling you Your Excellency because I'm kind of resisting being called a princess this morning because not feeling, yeah. So, all right. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has said we are going to put some force behind the voice of the Venezuelan people. Over the weekend, there were several developments in Venezuela. Mike Pence is actually meeting today with interim president Juan Guaido in Colombia. So let's just talk about Venezuela, bring people up to speed on what's happening there.
Well, what's happening is that the head of the National Assembly opposition party, which is the biggest party in the Venezuelan legislature, has said that unless Maduro, the president, steps down and holds the elections, he is claiming himself to be the legitimate president of Venezuela. And he's, of course, been recognized by the United States, by the European Union, by several other countries, on the grounds that Maduro has shown such massive incompetence and malice in his suppressing opposition requests for improving the economic situation and for being reasonable to the opposition, that he's no longer a legitimate president. And so there's a massive standoff because the United States provided a large amount of humanitarian aid, which got blocked at the official crossing of the border between Venezuela and Colombia. And the Venezuelan military refused to allow the aid to come through, and there have been several standoffs. They found tear gas, they fired real bullets. So it looks as though the pressure is on the United States either to fish or cut bait, either to basically stand behind the opposition with some kind of military expression or at least very strong economic expressions of distaste for the Maduro regime, or back off altogether. It's a very crisis-prone situation.
So the people are really in desperate need. We have sent humanitarian aid, I mean, along with others. It's humanitarian aid that is staged at the border between Venezuela and Colombia. That has now escalated into, you know, just a deadly response. No other way to say that.
Right.
Let's just talk for a moment about, you know, what is the wisdom? Is there any, what is the rationale? What is the wisdom behind keeping one's people from receiving humanitarian aid? Like, who does that benefit? What's the end game for Maduro?
The rationale for Maduro is he wants to stay in power, and he uses the massive resources that Venezuela has been able to access because of its large oil reserves to pay off his senior military officers and to keep them loyal to him. He basically inherited the socialist regime from Chavez, which initially was quite popular because it did indeed distribute a lot of the wealth of the country to the poor. But since Maduro came in charge, it has been so mismanaged, and there's been such corruption and such political repression that a very large number of Venezuelans absolutely want this fellow to go.
Absolutely. Okay, let's change gears. David, let's talk about Brexit. It's the month of March will be here at the end of the week. That means the deadline is looming, and yet people seem to be bailing out of the decision making process. So bring us up to date on Brexit.
We've got 32 days until Britain leaves the EU, according to a decision voted on by the US, by the British Parliament several months ago. And the agreement, the deal that Theresa May signed with the European Union Commission has not been approved by the British Parliament. So at this point, Britain is going to crash out without a deal. This has led to several attempts by Conservative MPs to postpone the implementation of the bill that will cause Britain definitively to leave. And of course, it's created a huge political crisis. The Labour Party has had 9 of its members resigning from it in Parliament. The Conservative Party has had 3 of its members. Part of the rationale has been disagreement with Prime Minister Theresa May's process of negotiating Brexit. But in the case of the Labour Party, the discontent goes much deeper. It's a deep resentment of the anti-Semitism implicit in the repeated anti-Semitic statements by, not only anti-Semitic, anti-Israeli, anti-Zionist statements by Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the opposition. So many Labour supporters are really fed up with the way the Labour Party has not only turned sharp left, but has become viciously anti-Semitic.
So, David, let me ask this question, because I know that there are folks listening right now are like, I don't know what I can, we can't do anything practically to help other than pray. So maybe we tell people specifically, like, from your perspective, how would you like Christians around the world to be praying in terms of Brexit? How do you want us to pray?
Well, I think Christians need to pray basically that the whole Brexit situation will be resolved peacefully and with minimum disruption of politics. But I think there's a spiritual issue of whether Britain wants to stay in a customs union, in a European Union federal organization that is becoming increasingly globalist and controlling and is limiting the options that the component national governments have to make their own policies. I mean, the Italian government proposes a budget. The European Union says you can't do that. People in different countries vote not to join the EU. The populations do. And the European Union says you've got to go back and vote again until you agree to join. That's what happened in the case of Ireland. So there is a real issue of can the UK recover its national sovereignty, its sense of democratic constitutionality, and get out of the EU, or is it imperative that it remains in for other reasons that the Almighty might know about? I tend to think the arguments of Christians in the UK, that in fact all of the Christians I know in the UK voted to leave the EU during the 2016 referendum in June. And so the feeling is really quite strong, especially amongst evangelical Christians.
Hey, I'll be right back. Dr. David Aikman and I are going to continue our conversation here on Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBurge. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, continuing my discussion, because this is what we do every Monday, with Dr. David Aikman. editor of Godspeed Magazine. I love to talk about all things international with you, and I feel like your perspective on this particular story of Hoda Muthanna, who was born in the United States, the daughter of a Yemeni diplomat. She would now, having moved from the United States to join ISIS and having aligned with ISIS and having advocated for domestic terrorism here in the United States, she now believes she should be able to come to the United States with her child. I just would love to have some of your perspective on this because I'm so mixed.
Well, you know, there's a British lady, or she was actually a 15-year-old teenager, who bought wholesale the ISIS propaganda for radical Islam, went over to Syria, married an ISIS fighter, saw how vicious the ISIS people were. She saw decapitated heads and she heard about people being tortured and executed. And she subsequently was captured by Kurdish forces in Syria. And now she's complaining that she wants to come back to England with her child. And the British government, I think, actually made what I think is a mistake by denying her the right to come back as a British citizen on the grounds that her actions had been so deplorable and so contrary to British values that she could no longer be treated as a British citizen. But it's interesting that conservative members of the British Parliament, who are considered right-wing, at least in regard to what ISIS is doing, has said that if you are a citizen of a country, you should be allowed back and then prosecuted for anything you've committed while abroad, any crime you've committed, or you should go to some other country. But in the case of the American citizen who came back, by supporting and propagandizing for one of the most heinous international terrorist groups, ISIS, that has been seen since the Nazis were in power in Germany. I mean, imagine if somebody had worked for the Nazis and wanted to come back. Well, she could come back, but she would be prosecuted if she came back. And I think that's probably what is going to happen in this case.
So, again, if you're listening, we're talking about the case of Hoda Muthanna. She's not a U.S. citizen, but she was born in the United States of America. She considers America her home. She left the United States of America having been radicalized, aligned with ISIS, married an ISIS fighter, at least one, has a child, and now would like to return to the United States, and her family has filed a lawsuit demanding that she be able to return to the United States. And it is my understanding, David, that she, you know, she is repentant. She acknowledges that the things that she has said on social media advocating for domestic terrorism here in the United States and around the world are heinous, are contrary to her own Islamic faith. Like she recognizes that ISIS is a perversion of Islam. Like she has made some public statements that certainly suggest that she is repentant. I've also heard it argued that, you know, if she is allowed to return to the United States, it will certainly be to face prosecution. But that there might be some pragmatic usefulness to the American government and others to have someone who has such an insider understanding of what's going on. If we're really on a campaign to change hearts and minds, maybe she is a person who could help do that.
Yes, I completely agree with you, Carmen. But since she was born in the United States, why is she not a U.S. citizen automatically?
Yeah, so apparently her dad, as a Yemeni diplomat, I don't know. See, this gets down into the vagaries of U.S. if you're born here, are you automatic? I mean, were you, you know, so if she was born at the Yemeni embassy, then technically she was on Yemeni ground. Like, I think it's complicated.
Right. Okay. Well, I agree with you that people who join a vicious overseas terrorist organization ought to be prosecuted for what they've done. But if they show repentance and contrition for the mistake they made, some allowance should be made for them. In the case of the British teenager, she shows virtually no contrition at all. And she was asked, well, what did you think of the decapitated heads that were paraded in front of you? She said, I had no problem with that. I mean, this woman is really asking for a very severe axe to come down on her in terms of prosecution if she is, in fact, allowed to come back to the UK.
Yeah, it sounds like a substantially different conversation. And I think that we're going to be facing this conversation, you know, many times, because these two women are not alone in having done this. There are apparently dozens of women in Syrian refugee camps who have had this experience. They were born and raised somewhere in the West. They believed what ISIS was selling online, and they have been living under the brutality of ISIS since they have moved and really given their lives over to the ISIS campaign in the last years. And now, you know, now what do they do, and what do we all do with them? So I think we're talking about mercy. We're also talking about prosecution. We're talking about redemption. I think we're having lots of those conversations. David, you and I probably, do you think you can dispense with telling us what's happening with Canada's Justin Trudeau and the trouble he's in? Do you think we can do that in a minute and a half?
Well, I can certainly dispense with that because I'm not an expert on Canadian politics, but I've followed this case just a little bit, and I'm sure your listeners know the basic story that the head of a Canadian company was accused of putting pressure on the Canadian government to get facilities for the company, and this led to the resignation of the Minister of Justice, and it's really beginning to lap at the feet like a rising tide of accusations or suspicion of corruption at the feet of Mr. Trudeau himself, who previously was regarded as the blue-eyed boy of American politics, of Canadian politics, but has since lost some of his glamour in all of these crises that have come up.
Mm. David Aikman, talking with you every week. We love your perspective on things, and frankly, we just love the sound of your voice. So thank you for being with us again on Mornings with Carmen.
Well, Carmen, thank you so much. I very much enjoy being on your program.
Likewise. All right, friends, I got to take one more quick break, then we will wrap up the hour. Don't go anywhere. I'm Carmen LaBurge. Welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. Friends, it is Monday. Whatever you're doing today, do it all to the honor and glory of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. So literally whatever you're doing. Wherever you're driving, wherever you're having coffee this morning, wherever you are laboring, wherever you are sitting waiting for something to happen, pray for me. I'm going to be driving this afternoon to Mississippi College. So we had a big blizzard here a few weeks back. I was supposed to speak at their chapel service, and school was canceled because of snow. And so this is my return trip to Mississippi College. So pray for me as I head down that direction and then back to be with you again tomorrow morning. Remember, you can always grab the podcast for the show at myfaithradio.com. You can click on the Mornings with Carmen tab. You can find out other stuff that we're up to and what we're doing at myfaithradio.com. We got a welcome packet. We got Bibles. We got all kinds of stuff. So come and visit us online at myfaithradio.com. I would appreciate it if you would share today's show with someone new, invite them into the Faith Radio family and into, well, let's just call it the Carmen Nation. All right, friends, this is Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBurge. I'll see you on Twitter at Carmen LaBurge, and on Facebook, Reconnect with Carmen. Have a great day, and God bless. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.